Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I am joined today by the head coach of Cal Poly Rugby, James Tesserero. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Alan. Okay, awesome. And you can just get like real close, and I can move it down a little bit too if you want in terms of the mic there. So no problem. James, how's it going?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. And you can even get just a little bit closer to you. I mean, I know it's kind of maybe let me get this straight here. This is a great podcast so far.
It's all good.
Okay, which way is this thing going? There we go. So this should come down a little bit. And then you can just kind of get closer to it and talk into it. Yeah, that's awesome. Let's try it again. How's it going?
Well, thank you, Alan.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. So, James, you are the head coach at Cal Poly Rugby. Is this your first season as the head coach? Or?
It is my first season at Cal Poly. I started in the fall semester in about October.
In October, okay. Okay, yeah. So have you just been stateside then, since then?
Yeah, that's right. I went home for a few weeks over Christmas back to Australia, but I've moved over to the States in October.
Okay, okay. How are you liking it so far?
It's great. San Luis Obispo is a great town, and the university is a good setup, so I've enjoyed myself.
Got it. So you came over just to coach rugby here, right? I mean,
that's right.
That's the goal here. And it's got to be interesting to come over for a sport that's a club sport and a job that, I mean, I don't know how much a club sport coach gets paid, but I'd imagine it's not much in terms of that. So what's the motivation for somebody from Australia, right? I mean, yep. If people haven't been able to tell already, to come over and coach here in the States for a club college team.
Well, the motivation is to be a part of a kind of quality rugby program in a developing rugby environment. I've noticed the perception is that rugby's growing quite strongly in the States. And so certainly the profile of American rugby is improving in Australia. And so I thought this was a good opportunity to be involved in a growing sport in the States. And also it's a great lifestyle experience. And I'd heard very good things about Cal Poly and San Luis Obispo, the town. So it's quite an easy choice.
I feel like I've met a previous rugby coach, and maybe you do or maybe you don't know the guys who've coached here previously, but I feel like there's kind of an Australia pipeline to Cal Poly. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there is. My predecessor was a guy, Dave Burnett.
Yeah, I played golf with Dave one time, I think.
Yeah, Dave was also an Australian guy, and we actually came out of the same club in Sydney, so Dave and I know each other quite well.
Okay, so that is kind of a pipeline in that direction, and you probably talked to Dave ahead of time, and
yeah, I did,
you know,
yeah.
How was it over there and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
What's been the biggest kind of adjustment, either just lifestyle wise or kind of maybe different than what you thought since you got over here?
Rugby is more or less the same all over the world. There's a few difficulties with me communicating with the local guys. We all speak English, but I speak Australian English. So the guys don't understand some of what I say, and they make fun of my accent a fair bit, which is fine. But
high school kids making fun of an accent? Come on. Or excuse me, just out of high school kids making fun of an accent? Yeah.
Yeah. So I know which words are going to set the boys off. And
okay. It's, any appropriate for the air?
No,
probably not.
Probably not.
Okay. Fair enough. So where are you from in Australia? And tell me a little bit about your rugby background.
Okay, so I'm from Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
I did my schooling and university there. I played for the University of Sydney in rugby, which is probably the biggest club back in Australia, probably one of the strongest. After that, I did an injury quite young, in my early 20s, so that cut my...
What did you hurt?
It was a broken ankle.
Broken ankle, okay.
Yeah.
A lot of the time I hear about collarbones, right? I mean, that's like more of a... But you broke your ankle.
Yeah, broke the ankle. And so I stopped playing in my early 20s and got into coaching quite young. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, that worked out for me. And I've taken coaching positions all over Australia in a couple of different states. And I've ventured out of Sydney and seen a lot of the country through rugby.
Sure.
And so my journey ended up here. And
yeah. So it's like a way to, it's a way to have that kind of a lifestyle where you get to see different places and different things. I know a lot of the kids who graduate from Cal Poly recently, especially in basketball, have gone on to play in places like Bulgaria and Germany. And actually, Drake UU is on the Perth Wildcats from Cal Poly here as well.
Okay.
It's athletics, I think it's really interesting when it can be a vehicle for people to see the world if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, most definitely. And rugby is a very international sport. There are Australian rugby coaches at the moment on pretty much every continent and in every rugby playing country. So there's definitely room to travel and see the world through rugby, for sure.
I have a friend who's French, and he would tell me different. But it seems to me that, based on my limited knowledge, kind of the center of the rugby world is Australia and New Zealand. Is that fair?
Well, I think New Zealand are the world champions. Australia and South Africa are probably second and third in the world. So three of the top three or four teams are in the Southern Hemisphere. The Northern Hemisphere rugby folks tend to be a little bit parochial and think that that is the center of the rugby universe.
Was that like France, England?
France, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland.
Okay.
But the results would show that the South is a little stronger.
Okay, good deal. And after college, did you play? Are there professional rugby leagues in Australia and New Zealand as well? I know there is in England.
Yeah, well, the setup is a little bit different. In Australia, you've got a club competition, which is both amateur and semi-professional. There are a number of grades, and the top grades are semi-professional and the bottom grades are very amateur.
Right.
And then out of the top grades, the Super Rugby professional provinces select their sides. So I never made it that far, but I played for an elite club, and the better players out of that elite club made their way into Super Rugby, and that's the professional pathway.
Okay, got it. And probably like the place where you could get paid the most to play rugby is in England? France. Okay.
That
might be why my French friend is a big, thinks that. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Well, I think the French club competition is now becoming like the English Premier League.
Okay.
In that they've got the most money, huge clubs, no salary cap. Mm-hmm. So the very best players from all over the world are finding their way to that French competition. But that's probably going to work adversely for the French national side.
Oh, really?
The same way the English national side suffers from all the imports into the Premier League.
Sure. Interesting.
So the French competition will probably get stronger, and as a result, the French national team will probably get weaker.
Kind of as a result of like not being able to develop those guys the way that they otherwise would through all the levels of the system there.
That's right. And there are now, the more internationals that come into the French competition, the less position there are for local Frenchmen.
Okay.
So that's kind of shrinking their pool of professional players, and that will affect their national sides.
Got it. So that was a little bit about national rugby, if people are interested. I want to talk a little bit about Cal Poly rugby as well. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that I had some friends who played rugby from here who went to school in San Diego with me. But I also had some friends from elementary and middle school. I don't know if you know the Madonnas, Mark and Peter and some of those guys. I was in first grade with Peter, 7 years old, with some of those guys as well. So can you tell me a little bit about Cal Poly rugby and at least what you know about? I mean, you haven't been here for a super long time, but how well developed is the rugby club here in comparison with other similar clubs maybe in California or at least in the region?
Well, I think in terms of the club sports in Cal Poly, I think rugby is probably one of the most well-established and largest in scale. It's been going as a club sport for more than 30 years, and we've got a lot of kind of old heads still involved with the club.
I mentioned the Madonnas.
Madonnas, yeah. Well, Madonnas, there are a lot of guys who kind of predate Pete Madonna.
Sure.
We've got our president, a lot of our board members are former players from 30 plus years ago. So it's well established. We've got alumni that stay very much involved in the program, and they're very essential to the way our program operates. It's quite a large program, and then we've got about 70 boys.
Oh, wow. That is a lot of people.
Registered at the moment, and kind of about 45 can get a game in any given week. That's three teams of 15.
Wow.
So we've got a big squad, and guys come in and out of it with university, with their university commitments, and unfortunately, guys get injured. So
that's part of the game, right?
I mean, that is unfortunately part of rugby, but We manage that as best we can. But it's a well-organized club, and it's very much student-run. So the students run almost all the administration, and they make all the big decisions and really drive the culture. And I'm just here to steer the on-field performance.
Got it. Steer the game, steer learning and teaching the game, I'd imagine. What position did you play when you played?
I was in the back, so in the centers or a fly half.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. My buddy down, and so I played like football with this guy here in San Luis Obispo area. He was a scrum half. He was a little guy who kind of I went to a lot of games. All I knew was when there was a scrum, he'd kind of pick the ball out and be the first one to get rid of it. And that was mostly what I could take away from it. I'll ask you a little bit just to kind of try to explain some of the parts. But I really enjoyed kind of the free-flowing nature of rugby. But it also has to be interesting to try to teach when it is such kind of a free-flowing game. Mm. Tell me about how you guys recruit players to be on the rugby club, to be in the rugby club. How do you do that in the United States, where maybe you do have a lot of guys who played high school or youth football, American football, I should say, for you, right?
Yep.
And or maybe other sports. And how do you find guys who are interested in playing a sport that is so physical and so brutal, you know, kind of physically demanding on so many levels? Is that kind of the real first challenge in terms of a rugby club?
Well, there's quite a well-established high school competition in California.
Okay.
Both in Northern California, out of the Bay Area, and out of Los Angeles and San Diego.
So there are like avenues for high school kids to play rugby as well.
Yeah, okay. That's right. And so a lot of the kind of more ambitious high school players tend to find their way into some of the bigger college programs, whether that's the teams down south teams like Cal and BYU and St. Mary's.
So like what are the good Cal, BYU, St. Mary's? I would imagine like does UCLA or USC have programs?
UCLA's got a very, very strong program also. Mm-hmm. So as we said, the better high school players tend to gravitate towards those colleges that have quite large rugby programs. And fortunately, we're quite well regarded also. So we have a fair bit of interest from some of the top high school players.
Right.
Tend to make contact and let us know that they've put in applications at the university. But
there's not really like a recruiting process either, right? I mean, or are there rules surrounding it like the NCAA on some level?
Oh, I don't think we don't kind of offer scholarships.
Right, you can't offer that part
and,
of it.
And all we can really offer is a really good program and Cal Poly obviously offers an excellent education, and that's really our best selling point. And probably the fact that the students will graduate with a very well-regarded degree that's probably a big enticement, and they'll get 4 years of high-quality rugby in Division 1A and get to play the best teams in the country. So for the guys who are keen to study here, it's quite an easy sell. But then also the fact that the university is quite academic, that excludes a lot of the top rugby talent.
Yeah, right. I mean, just like for other sports, I mean, it's probably no different on a lot of levels in terms of sometimes you have really great, you know, players who might not get into Cal Poly.
That's right. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of point in me kind of necessarily approaching all the best talent around, because most of them won't find their way into the Cal Poly system. But for those who do put in applications and have a rugby background, we certainly encourage them and try and provide any support we can.
What percentage of the kids would you say out of the 70 that are signed up, how many of those kids actually like have played rugby before, or do you have kids who haven't who want to come out? How does that work, and what are the percentages there?
I'd say more than probably about 60% have maybe 4 or 5 years of experience behind them.
Okay. So over half.
Over half have considerable rugby background. A small number come from other sports. We get a couple of guys who have played football and for whatever reason aren't involved in football anymore. And some of them have been football players who've had injuries and have found their way over to rugby and they really enjoy it. So we get a fair few guys who have a football background. We also have a few guys who just want to try it. And the fact that we've got 3 or 4 grades means that the guys who are new to it, we can put in the lower grades and they can get their experience up that way.
When you say grades, levels of play, right?
Yeah. So we have most weeks we have three grades. So
like an A team, a B team, and a C team.
And we call that first grade, second grade, and third grade.
Okay.
And the third grade has a squad, which is quite large.
Sure, because those are the guys who are learning and kind of getting into it.
Exactly right. And so tomorrow, for example, we've got our first and second grades are scheduled against San Diego State in first and second grades.
Where's that game?
That's at San Diego State.
So you're driving down there after this? Is that what's happening?
Okay. Yeah, that's right. And then our third grade have a development match against University of San Diego.
Yeah. Which is a much... USD probably has a not quite as developed program down
there. That's right, yeah. Right. So we schedule our third and fourth grades against the first grades from the smaller program.
Like UC San Diego would be another example of that.
Exactly, yeah. So we kind of, they're smaller programs with developing players, and it becomes quite a good fit.
Right.
And, a big part of getting better as a rugby player is just getting games under your belt.
Right, experience.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I would imagine one of the attractive things about coming and coaching in the United States is that you have maybe athletes and players who haven't had the high-level coaching that maybe they have access to, that you have access to, or you had access to in Australia, and it's maybe a place where that you feel like you can maybe make a really big difference in terms of an individual player's or a team's ability to not just kind of get better on their own, but just like big picture, bring rugby. Sort of competency on some level, just to raise it overall.
Yeah.
Is that one of the things that maybe attracted you to come here in the first place?
Yeah, I think so. I think American rugby has a lot of kind of untapped potential and a huge pool of incredible athletes who may not become sprinters or may not become wide receivers in American football.
Yeah.
And there's kind of ready-to-go athletes who just need to learn rugby. So if they ever decided to take on rugby, I think America would be much stronger and is a bit of a sleeping giant.
Yeah. And I hear the same thing about soccer, right? And soccer's maybe a little farther ahead than rugby for sure. But in a similar way, some of the best leagues are not in the United States. And that's soccer and rugby are similar that way. They're similar in that maybe the access to really good coaches, here versus a place like Amsterdam, Holland or, England or a place like that. Mm. In those European countries, for instance, in soccer, right from the time they're, 6, 7, 8 years old, they're getting the best coaching. Mm. And here, if you might not even start to have an opportunity to have any rugby exposure until you're 12 or 13, maybe, or something like that. Do you see a parallel kind of soccer and rugby in terms of how they're viewed maybe in the States? And like I said, maybe soccer is a little bit ahead, but do you look at soccer as maybe a sport to kind of see how they have built in the United States? And
Most definitely. I've spent a bit of time in the States over the last 15 years.
Okay.
And I've definitely noticed a huge boost in the profile of soccer. 10, 15 years ago, I think soccer had almost no profile, and now it's a varsity sport, and it's, there's a professional competition, and it's definitely where we want to be in about 10 years in terms of rugby. I think soccer and rugby both have huge advantages in that they're international sports and they're extremely relevant on every continent. And I think that'll probably be, as things get increasingly globalized, I think that will kind of increase increase the profile of sports that you can use to travel overseas and where international matches become quite relevant.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the game a little bit as well. Sure. Just the game itself. It's one of the things that I think maybe it has up against it is the physical nature of it. I mean, you have to have kind of a certain kind of mindset to be able to play rugby successfully. I think having gone to games. So I played football in high school, and then I'd go to these rugby matches in college just to watch my friend play. And I'd say to myself, there's an element of that I really miss, that physicality, that kind of brutal nature that you kind of have to just have a little bit of a mindset about to be able to get through a sport like that. What are some of the things high points in terms of what you think people don't understand about rugby, the game itself, and what are some things, and maybe it's not easily explainable. Maybe I need like one of those things you see where, a tablet and the things work in and you're pointing things out or whatever. But what are the things that you think maybe an average fan, might not know or just things about the game that are really, really important that are hard for people like me to understand.
Yeah, I think you're spot on that aggression is quite a big part of it, and big physical aggressive guys will always have a very big part in rugby. We also like to think that there's a position for everyone. So if you look at your 15 rugby players, there'll be very varied body shapes. So you'll have a couple of huge guys, very muscular. You'll have a couple of tall guys who are good in the line out. Smaller guys who are quick have a place out wide.
I'm going to stop you there. The line out is when the ball goes out of bounds, and then it gets that. That's kind of, I don't want to call it silly, but that's kind of like, that's the silliest part
it's
of rugby.
Unique. It's unique.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to try to describe it. It's when the ball goes out of bounds and the guy stands out of bounds to put the ball back into play.
Yeah.
And he's on one of the teams, and yet both of the teams pick a guy up above their head.
Yeah.
Have two guys who pick another guy up above their head.
That's right.
To throw the ball in.
Yeah.
What are the rules there, and why don't they just throw it to their own teammate every time?
Well, like, they try to. It's a highly,
is it hard?
It's extremely hard. It's a difficult skill. The throw's got to be absolutely straight, and it's a contest for the ball each line out.
Okay, so the throw has to be straight.
It's got to go down the center of the two lines.
Okay, that's the rule.
Yes. So
even though the guy's on one team or the other,
yes,
the throw's got to be, it's like a jump ball in basketball where
that's
it's
right.
supposed to be, even though it's one guy from the one team that's throwing it.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's throwing the ball.
I was always kind of confused about that one.
Throwing the ball
like,
straight.
Why aren't they just throwing it to their guy?
Throwing the ball straight down the middle of a line in that situation is quite difficult regardless.
Sure.
And then
sure.
you have to coordinate it with a lift and time it and throw it away from the opposition line out. So that's a very highly technical area of the game.
Right.
And an area where we spend huge amounts of time.
I can imagine. I mean, having watched them both good and bad, I mean, yeah. you know, the school I was at was maybe a middle or low level kind of a club, maybe, you know, but like watching that happen, I was always just very, you know, that was one of the confusing parts for me.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you on the line
out. Okay.
You can continue to talk about like the different parts of the game.
Yeah, well, it's a game that there's a lot of laws. It's quite a thick law book, and so that's quite a challenge when you're introducing new players.
Yeah. And I wanted to say it's flowing. It's a flowing game. So if I'm standing next to somebody, and because you know there's usually not bleachers out there, if I'm standing next to somebody watching a game and trying to kind of get the reason why a guy got sent to the sin bin or the reason why X, Y, and Z happened, it's not like American football where the game stops. You can kind of analyze it and tell somebody about it. Tell somebody about why that was right or wrong, and then the game starts again. It's like the game's kind of always happening in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's one of the big most appealing points of rugby is that there's continuity of play, and every time there's a tackle, the player must release the ball.
There you go. That's the kind of stuff.
And then the two teams have a physical contest over the ball, which looks like just a wrestle, but it's quite highly regulated in terms of what you're allowed to do.
It's called the scrum.
A ruck.
It's sorry.
A ruck.
What's okay?
A scrum is after a dropped ball.
Okay.
And that's similar, a bit different.
Okay.
So when there's a tackle, the tackle player must release the ball, and the two teams basically fight over the ball, have a physical contest over the ball, and whichever team wins that physical contest gets to use the ball again. And so the referee can often not blow his whistle, and play cannot stop for 4 or 5 minutes at a time when it's a good game.
Totally.
Yeah, so sometimes there'll be a tackle, there'll be a ruck, the opposition will get the ball, they'll use it a couple of times, get a couple of possessions, and possession can change every couple of tackles.
Yeah.
And play can go on without a whistle, which is one of the more appealing things about rugby.
Right. So when somebody gets tackled, they have to release the ball.
That's right.
And theoretically, they're releasing it kind of behind them as they get up or as they kind of slow. Describe that to me in terms of the rules, because I watched all these games and I'm like, by the end, I could say, well, that didn't really look right. That kind of looked like he was supposed to. But I didn't really understand the kind of rules about the ruck itself.
Okay. Well, when a player gets tackled, he goes to ground and he tries to release and place the ball as far back towards his team as possible.
Right.
So that when there's a contest over the ball, there's a slight advantage to the team that got tackled.
Got it. Does the guy who got tackled have to be at the front of the ruck?
No, he's got to stay on the ground.
He's got to stay on
the ground. And the ruck basically forms on top of him. So at different times, he's got about 10 guys having a fight for the ball on top of him.
And does he get out from underneath at some point?
He would be wise to.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally, right? Yeah. In case the thing collapses.
Yeah, or he can sometimes get caught with some studs, some cleats.
Yeah, that's no fun either.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're talking about different guys, you know, with different body types too. My buddy was one of the smallest guys I know, you know, who kind of was the scrum. I think it's called scrum half. He
That's
took
right.
the ball out from underneath the ruck or the
scrum
and yeah. And kind of started it on its way one way or another on one side or the other usually. When I watch that part of the game, it's a lot like football at the very last play of the game where guys are trying to lateral it back. Mm. There's no forward passing in rugby, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So you gotta lateral it back. And
yeah.
And oftentimes out of the scrum where you might have what, seven guys or something like that in that,
yep.
there would be a line of guys kind of from the side of the field that the scrum was on all the way to the other side of the field, ready to, you know, take the ball and run with it or pitch it out to the next guy, and it kind of yep. progressed down the line that way.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Is that like...
That's pretty spot on. So yeah. what you're looking at is a scrum where all the forwards are involved in the scrum.
Forwards are really big guys, right?
Forwards are the bigger guys. Yeah. They're all involved in the scrum. And then the back line, which are the generally the smaller, faster guys with better passing skills, yeah. they'll usually use the scrum to try and launch an attacking play. And that's a very good opportunity with all the forwards out of play. It's basically seven backs on seven backs, and you see a lot of the most exciting attacking play from that scrum,
right.
from the starter plays.
And if you're a really good rugby player, you can have a body of a forward but be as fast as a back? Is that kind of what you're
ideally,
thinking?
Ideally, yeah. Right. If we had 15 of those, that'd be a good team.
Marshawn Lynch?
Marshawn Lynch would be just about the best recruit we could get for rugby. He'd be ideal. Yeah.
But there, it's brutal, but then there's rules about being able to like continue a play. You have to stop playing at some point when you get tackled. You have to let the ball go. Those are things that I think for people that I watched anyway, when I watched rugby more, that was hard for new players to like engage and have that contest. And then when that part of the game's like, when it's gone, like the ball's out, and being able to turn it off and on and off and on, right? In terms of that aggression. Is that something that you find is tough for some guys?
I think so. I think experienced players know when they can legally in a match be aggressive and put a shoulder on the opposition, and there are only certain times and certain contests.
And there's certain ways you have to tackle too. You can't That's tackle right. with your head. You can't tackle in certain ways too.
Yeah, you've got to wrap your arms around. So you want to make contact with the shoulder first. Usually get your head into the side and wrap your arms around. And a good tackle would have shoulders into the opposition shorts and wrap the arms and then drop it low.
Okay.
And the idea is to take away their legs.
Okay. Do you think there's something football could learn as they try to like talk about not having helmet-to-helmet hits and stuff like yeah. that in terms of rugby tackling?
Well, I think it's the technique for American football is very different because you've got huge pads and a helmet. In rugby, obviously, you don't wear a helmet and very few guys wear shoulder pads. So you aim to use your shoulders.
Some do.
Some players wear very small shoulder pads.
Like just like foam padding kind
of. Yeah,
a little bit of foam
right. padding, which is built into a vest.
Right. Okay.
But that's quite rare.
Yeah.
But it's generally kind of just shoulder on contact. So your shoulder makes contact with the opposition's body.
Okay.
And so you've got to be more careful, I think, about getting your head out of the way.
That's the way. And careful is a good description of yep. how guys tackle in rugby.
Yeah. It's it looks like it's just a very aggressive act, but there's a lot of technique involved. And at training, we spend a lot of time making sure that the tacklers get their head in the correct position and that they make contact with their shoulders. And the guys who have more effective technique are all often the safer technique as well. And we look to try and reduce any head knocks and...
Yeah.
That unfortunately happens.
Sure. I mean, it's going to happen when you're out there like that. And a lot of the guys wear, you know, helmets and different kinds of headgear. Not helmets, but like
scrum caps.
Scrum caps. There you go. They're not like wrestling caps, but they're somewhere in between like a 1920s football helmet and a something like that. I don't really know how to describe it. Maybe like soccer players kind of are starting to wear sometimes at the youth levels too. Why is rugby better than football?
Well, I've got to be careful here. I've become a bit of a football fan since I've arrived here.
Okay, fair enough.
And I arrived in good time with the NFL playoffs, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. I prefer rugby. Obviously, it's what I know and what I've grown up with. I think it's when it's played well, I think it's quite a beautiful game, and there's a lot of continuity of play. It's very exciting. It's physical. That's for everyone to determine. But
sure.
I think I'd encourage people to get down and watch some rugby and they can make decisions themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I would encourage that as well. How about Australian rules football? Since you're from Australia, I need to like try to figure out what this thing is. This kind of hybrid I don't know. It just seems very random that, I mean, maybe that's American rules football. People think of it the same way. Like, but it seems like Australian rules football was kind of always the quirkiest random thing to watch. It was on TV when I was growing up, and there's the guys in the hats that make the thing, I never had no clue at all. Yeah. I just knew that everybody was going crazy for it. so what are the differences between rugby and Australian rules football?
Well, Australian rules football is closer to Gaelic football, and it's different from rugby and American football in that there's less, the possessions kind of go continuously where, I guess there's less importance to possession and more importance to field position, and it's almost entirely a kicking game. So you kind of move the ball up the field by kicking it to each other.
Right, yeah.
And then there's the spectacular parts are they take marks where if you take a fair catch from a kick, you get to have a free kick.
Right.
And so that's probably the more spectacular part where they jump off each other's shoulders and take spectacular marks.
How old are you?
Sorry. I'm 33.
Okay, so if I put you in the NFL right now, how would you do against punters and kickers in the NFL just right now?
How would I do?
Yeah.
Probably not too good.
Not too good. Why not? a lot of guys have made the transition up to the NFL as punters and kickers. So
yeah.
I just ask because I'm interested to know like what the thought process is there. If everybody who plays rugby at a high level down in Australia maybe says, man, maybe you're just not maybe that's not your specialty.
That's not my specialty, and okay. I'm my playing years are long behind
me. Sure, okay.
But there's, I think, AFL lends itself more to punting because the entire game is based on punting.
Okay.
In rugby, there's usually only two or three guys out of 15 who will ever kick the ball. So those, I don't know if there's any precedent for rugby players becoming punters.
It's mostly Aussie rules football players.
Yeah, I think so. But I think there's a pretty steady stream of Aussie rules footballers who are trying to finish their career in Australia and finish.
This is why I asked you for the difference, because I'm pretty ignorant about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that just the nature of AFL football and they're kicking the ball dozens of times a game and they grow up just kicking the ball on a daily basis means that they can swap an AFL ball for an American football.
Is an AFL ball a lot like a rugby ball?
It's smaller and it is, it's designed to be kicked.
Okay, got it. Rugby balls are definitely not.
A rugby ball is designed to be passed and kicked a little bit. Right.
It's like a really fat football.
Yeah, it's right. It's more of a more rounded football with rounded points. It doesn't cut the air as well as an American football. So it's probably halfway between an American football and a soccer ball, you might say.
Cool. Let's talk about the team this year. You got here. I've been getting to know them, I'm sure, over the past 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Your season has already started, but generally goes, from the end of December to the middle end of May? Is that kind of the timeline?
The fall season.
Okay.
Before Christmas is
so there is a fall season.
It's more or less preseason,
mm-hmm.
And we try and mix in a couple of just trial matches and friendlies,
especially for new guys. I bet that's a big deal, yeah.
And it's important that the coaching staff gets some trial matches, which aren't as important to implement the style of play we want and give players feedback and get a feel for which guys are better in which positions. And then we break for about a month over the Christmas break, and then we've just come back now into the winter season and things are really starting to ramp up. So we're playing a mix at the moment of kind of friendly matches, and we've got four division matches which are starting quite shortly.
Yeah.
We're starting in February.
So there's like a league or a conference, or it's called a division?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and who's in Cal Poly's division?
Santa Clara,
uh-huh.
St. Mary's.
Uh-huh.
SDSU,
uh-huh.
And University of California, Santa Barbara.
Okay.
So
it's kind of like the Southern California-ish plus St. Mary's and Santa Clara.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the bigger, it's the bigger Div 1 universities out of the West Coast.
Okay.
With a couple of universities such as Cal excluded because they play in a breakaway varsity cup.
Okay.
Which is a little bit different, but
yeah.
Yeah, there's kind of promotion and relegation. So I think last year our division was larger, and I think one or two teams went to the breakaway competition and one or two teams dropped a division. So at the moment we compete in our division games just against those four other teams.
But sometimes it's five or six other teams depending on how good those programs did the year before.
That's right.
In the breakoff thing, which I'm picturing, I don't know how much you know about our college football system, but I'm picturing that's like the FBS, like the bowl championship. Those guys kind of do their own thing. It's not really a playoff system that's more
right.
regulated in,
kind
in
of,
that
yeah.
way. Right?
Yeah, okay. I don't entirely understand the breakaway system, yeah. but I know that it's got a handful of the biggest programs in the country.
Got it. Okay.
Things like Cal, who I think are probably the top team from what I've seen.
Are they the best in the country?
Yeah, I think so. We saw them 2 weeks ago and they were...
Yeah, I got invited to go up to that match with some friends of mine, and I just didn't make it up there because I was spouting off that I wanted to go see some rugby games. And they're like, well, I think Cal Poly's coming up to play Cal, and I was like, man, now I gotta decide whether I want to go or not or whether I can. But I couldn't make it up there, but they were pretty good.
Yeah, they were exceptional. They were a very big program, well coached, very very well resourced.
Yeah.
And they were too good for us 2 weeks ago.
Got it. And is that where the U.S. gets some of its players from the national team, from some of these breakaway programs usually?
I believe. Well, I think Cal have a very strong tradition of feeding players directly from the NCAA into the American team.
Right.
So a lot of those guys will be thereabouts in terms of the representative side and the national side. They may graduate from Cal, do a couple of years at one of the bigger clubs, and then find their way from one of the clubs into the American setup.
I would imagine if you're like a mediocre or decent rugby player in a place like Australia and you want like an overseas experience and you can afford to go to Cal without a scholarship maybe, or maybe they do give rugby scholarships there. But, you know, I'd imagine that might be like a fun cultural experience if nothing else. If you're like, hey, man, I know I'm decent, but I don't really want to play after college, but I want to play now. I don't know. It seems like that might be something too that some of those universities might consider as well.
I think it's more probably less the university system and more the club system here. There's quite a well-established club system in the States.
Okay.
And I think every American club is pretty full of Australians, New Zealanders.
They are, okay.
And South Africans.
Guys who are kind of hanging on.
Yeah, or who have that same idea that they kind of weren't quite good enough to play professionally in Australia, and their level of talent can earn them quite a good living in the States.
Oh, really? Okay, so there's like a decent, like you said, club...
Well, I think the clubs, there is. And the clubs here are quite well established, and I think they can kind of set them up with jobs and accommodate them and travel them over. And
got it. Like jobs, like not just rugby playing, but like thinking about like other jobs
careers.
Too while they're here and
that's
that kind
right.
of thing.
Yep.
Oh, so they use it like a networking opportunity as well.
Most definitely.
Is it a thing that's a lot bigger in like Ivy League kind of schools over there too? I don't know why, but I picture a rugby like, Ivy League, like Northeast, New England.
I think rugby is very big in different, or it's quite big in different pockets of America.
Right.
And I understand that New England rugby is very big. California is quite a hot spot for rugby. And then the ski towns seem to be quite good spots for rugby as well. Your Colorado and Utah seem to be very strong as well.
Cool.
And at different points around middle America as well, there are quite big rugby hubs.
Uh-huh.
But it's certainly not strong across the 50 states.
So I was looking at your guys' schedule and I saw that, you know, generally speaking, even in your division this year, you're playing on the road most of the time. What home games do you guys have? I know there aren't any like right quick coming up, but maybe I'm looking at it now and I see there might be a one or two added there that I didn't see before. So
We've got St. Mary's on the 7th of March. That's going to be
Saturday.
That's a Saturday. And that's going to be a very big, very difficult interdivision match. St. Mary's are probably the quality team out of our division.
Okay.
And we really need to, our aim is to win all four division matches so that we finish as the number one seed in our division.
Okay.
And that becomes quite important when it gets to the playoffs to ensure that you get a bit of an easier run.
Okay. So you go to a tournament somewhere in the playoffs that has teams not just from your division. Is that
how
correct.
That works? That's correct. Yep. So it goes from kind of your division to Western Conference to National.
Okay.
And as with most playoff systems, the higher you seed, the better your run.
Right.
So if we find ourselves dropping a couple of division matches, we may find ourselves with very, very difficult first up matches.
against teams from other divisions.
That's correct.
That
yeah.
won their division, maybe.
That's right.
From like Colorado or somewhere like that.
That's right. Picture. Yeah. Okay. So you're kind of your division matches are extremely important, and the ones we'd kind of circle there is St. Mary's, which will be a big challenge.
No.
And we've also got a home game against San Diego State on the 11th of April.
Okay.
And that will be...
So St. Mary's is the 7th of March on Saturday. San Diego State is on April 11th.
That's right.
Also a Saturday?
That's right.
Okay. And do these games happen, I'm picturing, on the field, the lower field at Cal Poly would be where something like this might happen?
That's right. The Cal Poly playing fields are just down from the baseball fields.
Right. So not the fake turf ones.
No.
Those wouldn't be fun for rugby.
No. We train there occasionally, but okay. That's not quite appropriate for four matches.
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They actually played some soccer matches on the other field last season, maybe one or two, women's soccer, as they were getting the stadium refurbished.
Sure.
They did that. So those are easy to find right off the road there. And what time do those matches usually start out?
We haven't got exact times kickoff times yet, but they usually start, the first 15 games will most often start about 3 p.m.
Okay, and just kind of go throughout the late afternoon.
Yeah,
then.
So on some occasions we play third 15, then second 15, then our first grade, and then other teams prefer to play the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still working out the exact times and schedules.
So they can see maybe who didn't play in the first, like who, so they can have their reserves ready for the first team if they need to, the guys from the second team.
Well, tomorrow, for example, we're playing our third grade first up.
Okay.
And then the thirds players will reserve for the second grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second grade will reserve for the first grade. So that's the ideal situation. But that's the way it's scheduled around the rest of the most of the rugby world.
Got it.
But the American system is a little bit different in that most times you play your first grade match first. And then the reserves after.
Got it. Okay. Well, that makes some sense then. And then you have some other home games as well. Is that right?
We've got...
Are those the ones in bold as I look at this? Or
No, the ones in bold are the... they're most of the division matches.
Got it. Okay. So you have St. Mary's at home, and then you have... did you say San Diego State?
San Diego State at home. That's
at home
right.
as well. Okay. So you're playing them this weekend on the road, and then you come back here and play them again.
Yeah. This weekend, we play them on the road, and that's a friendly. That's still part of our preseason, and that's not a division match.
Right. Okay.
But it obviously holds more significance.
Yeah. You want to learn something?
Yeah. It holds more significance than other trial matches,
mm-hmm.
because we do play them in 2 months for... what will be a very important division match.
Yeah. How much you mentioned like the tradition and the people that are around rugby. It seems like that really is a difference maker that kind of holds it together in a lot of ways. It's the guys who've been around the program for a long time. Can you talk about what that's like in San Luis Obispo? Like you talked about alumni and people who are who are involved and stay involved. That seems like a lot bigger than even the guys from Australia who come over and play, they're also having jobs and stuff like that too. So the impact is kind of bigger than just the rugby on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think the Cal Poly rugby program has a very active alumni. I'm still new and getting a feel for this, but I kind of they've got an incorporated body which is run by the alumni, and they kind of fund a lot of the program. They offer so it's the students run the administration, but the alumni kind of guide the students, which is always very useful. A couple of times a year we put on fundraising dinners, and the alumni support those very strongly, and they always get together and
have a good time. If there's one thing I know about rugby players, they know how to have a good time.
Yeah, and the old heads get together and talk about games they won or lost 30 years ago and embellish stories, and the stories get better every year and
guys,
with every beer.
Bones were sticking out of their skin and they're still playing probably.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you believe what they say.
I've seen some crazy stuff on the sidelines of a rugby match. I mean, guys with their heads bleeding and they just wrap it up in tape and throw them back in there like a guy from a bad, World War I movie or World War II movie. I don't know how to describe it beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal. Well, and I'm going to mess it up again. James Tesserero.
That's good.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Got it. All right. Well, James, I really appreciate you stopping by. You can find Cal Poly rugby information at the website?
calpolyrugby.com.
There you go.
And there's a Facebook supporters group you can like. If you just look for Cal Poly Rugby on Facebook, you can support it there, and we you can like the page, and we provide updates there very regularly.
Does it cost anything to go to the games?
No.
No. Okay. So the games are free to go to. It's a nice way to spend a Saturday afternoon in March or April when I'm sure it'll be really nice here. It's always really nice here, right?
It is.
Maybe not quite like Sydney, but it's a good place to live. I know we enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy your time here as well.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, Owen.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Oh, can't find my way around Trouble Town. Signs out.